Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your hosts, Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones. And now, here's Clinton and Leslie.
What's up?
How's it going, Leslie?
I kind of sound like a frog today.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Show hangover.
Show hangover again?
Show hangover. Although the opera was awesome, and no, this is not because I was singing. It was just a long day. No, I was yelling at chorus members to get in their spot.
Oh, those chorus members!
I know they're just wandering around backstage, not doing much, you know, not really thinking about the fact that they have to enter, you know. But yeah, so I sound a little froggy today.
I see. In which opera is this that you've been working on, Lily?
It's Victory Hall Opera's Symphony, which is playing at the Haven. You've got two more chances to see it, November 1st and November 3rd at 7:30, right smack dab in the middle of downtown. It's a good time, man. It's a good time. It's not what you would call regular opera.
Dig it.
Yeah. It's funny.
Dig it.
Yeah, even the like stodgy, stuffy first night audience could not help themselves but to burst into laughter at certain points.
Your kid, are you allowed to laugh at opera?
At this one you are. Miriam was upset that we couldn't get everybody drunk before the show. She was. She was like, why can't we get them drunk? ABC rules.
I am frequently upset.
At ABC rules?
at ABC rules.
Yeah, so yeah, that's what's going on.
And with the attitude of the ABC, I think it's actually pronounced ABC rules.
Oh, wow.
As the ABC marched across Europe, extending its rule.
Oh goodness, I had no idea that they did that. But thank you for illuminating me.
There we go, saving the European population from young women buying water.
Well, all right,
one parking lot at a time.
One parking, right. Oh, goodness gracious. All right. Well, we should get to... Okay,
Do we have a live feed going?
We don't have a live feed because my phone has decided it doesn't like me this morning.
Oh, really? Oh.
I don't know what's going on. It doesn't want to do the video. I don't know why. So I'm trying to figure that out.
It's just Sonic. Shall we go to our first guest when we do that?
Yeah, let's do that. Hey, Joel. What's going on?
Joel Jones in the house returning to the show. Thank you for being here, Joel.
For having me, Clinton and Leslie.
What's...
Oh, am I being too quiet?
Yeah,
come on, speak up,
thanks,
Joel.
Thanks for having me.
There you go.
You don't have to speak up.
That's what amplification
is for.
That's what volume
Thank
is
you.
For?
That's the A word I was looking for.
Allowing quiet people to be loud from ever since 1934, roughly, I think.
There we go. So you are the co-founder of Big Blue Door Improv, and you're here to talk about telling true stories.
Yeah, Big Blue Door. In addition, actually, even before we did as much improv, we have a true stories program. A little similar, I guess, in some ways to the Moth, if people have heard of that, or mm-hmm. you know, This American Life. They do stories there.
And wait. So clear that up for me. Before you guys did improv, so what? What was Big Blue Door? What is Big Blue Door?
Big Blue Door is the co-founders are me and my wife Jen. This is our sixth year.
Is she listening? What up, Jen?
Hey, Jen, how you doing? I don't know if she is because maybe she
of course
is.
She would be. Wouldn't she? Well, she wouldn't break our hearts by not listening to the show.
It's lovely hubby.
I know.
Of
it's
course
a chaotic
she
weekend.
Not that we would participate in show guilt.
Yeah, exactly. No.
We would never do that.
We would never do
Jen.
That.
She may be listening to this later. there, though.
Podcast.
Yeah. Right, because, of course, you can listen to it on the podcast on SeaVoPodcast.com. Can't you, Joel?
Yes, you can. Check it out at
SeaVoPodcast.
PeopleSodcast.
That's one of my favorite podcasts. One of my favorite podcasts.
Yeah, it's a farming thing, the podcast.
Yes.
Yep. Saving Europe, one sod in the parking lot at a time. anyway, cool. Big Blue Door.
Yeah, so we founded it. We do sketch comedy writing and play short plays, and we do, although we haven't done a lot of those, and we do true stories, and we do improv. And when we first came down here, our sort of big thing that we did was this monthly show called the Big Blue Door Jam, where people came and told 6 to 8 minute true stories, and we changed the themes each month, and ran that for a couple of years. And it was really successful. And why did we stop? Well, good question. We stopped because our improv program was taking off, and we needed the performance venues, time for that. We used to do it at the what became Woolly Mammoth was before that was the Blue Ridge, not Blue Ridge, Blue Ridge Biker Bar. It was the what was it called? The Black Market Moto Saloon.
Oh yeah.
And then when he closed that, we moved to Sivo Coffee, and then Sivo Coffee, we had to do it at 7 o'clock, and the improv just worked better than that show did at that venue. So,
right.
And so we brought back story shows from time to time at Bonn, other places. We did it at the Belmont Arts Collaborative this past summer. We had some story shows, but all the whole time we've been running these storytelling classes, where people, it's like a 6-session course. You come in, we in the class, you develop material, you find material from your own life and put together a bunch of different stories, and then...
So I think you're answering the question that I haven't asked. So what's the difference between a story, a true story show, and an improv show?
Well, the improv show uses... you can use real stuff in an improv show, and we often have stories as part of an improv show, but an improv is about the scenes, creating a scene with two people. A true story show is where you stand in front of a microphone, kind of like stand-up comedy, and tell a story. It's a great thing. It's been going on. I mean, kind of a scene. Of course, people have been doing true stories forever, but this sort of 6 to 8 minute format has been a big deal in New York for about 10, 15 years. Before us, there was briefly a show called Secretly Y'all. Mm-hmm. I think that ran for about 9 months or something.
Uh-huh.
And they are now in Richmond running something along those lines. We're 2.5 years. We'd have jams and do all kinds of cool stuff with that.
So are the stories expected to be funny?
They can be. They can be. Often there is fun and humor in them, but you don't feel that pressure to have to tell a lot of jokes or be funny. You don't have to be funny. We work on helping people kind of keep the... If people tell the story and they keep it focused on themselves and, you know, keep yourself the center of your own story, and if you... And this is true if you're telling any kind of story. You know, keep yourself focused as a center. Don't make a story about someone else. If you hold your point of view and don't apologize or take time away to step out of that, then you can tell a pretty interesting story that's engaging for people to watch and listen to, even if it's not hilarious or even if it's not, you know, makes people break down and weep or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I've been to a couple of the storytelling things that you've done. I think I judged one a few years ago.
Yeah, sure, we should have judges.
Yeah. And they're really good. And most of the stories were funny. And yeah. Even though I don't think all of them were meant to be. You know, as it happens, you know, you tell a story to somebody and they think something's funny that you didn't intend to be funny. You're hey, don't laugh at that.
Yeah, and we kind of, with the improv too, you know, with all of our approach to comedy, is our whole point is you tell the truth, and then when you notice when something's funny. And so you're training people to try to notice when things are funny and enjoy that rather than trying to get in your head and be funny. Because that's, I mean, even any kind of great stand-up, whether it's Richard Pryor or, you know, Louis C.K. or anybody, almost always they're working from true stories.
True
place and their true thoughts and feelings, and that's what makes them interesting to listen to. Even if it's someone and they care about things, they're talking about stuff, they're not just riffing on stuff that don't interest, you know, like even someone like Jerry Seinfeld, who thinks like he's trivial, but he's not like, I don't care about anything. He's like, I care about little bottle caps, you know.
Right.
Like, how can anyone have a bottle cap like this? It makes no sense. You know, he's talking about breakfast cereal, but he's still doing that same thing, which is, I mean, there are a couple comedians I think who do something else, but that, you know, finding the true story and being able to tell it and share it. And we also teach people, you know, how if there's something uncomfortable, you don't have to share it. You know, you can skip things. You can, you know, you pick what to share. It's your life. And to not let yourself get it put in a box by other people about what you you know, have to do or don't do.
Well, that is the trick, not getting put in a box by other people.
Well, and you know, we're living in a society of strangers where everyone has an incentive to put other people in a box constantly.
Right,
you
gotta
do it. So, and you know, being a performer really is about, in some ways, we don't teach it this way, but like figuring out how to stay out of the box.
Yes.
You know, because as soon as you're in the box, you're boring.
Right.
People know about you. And so how can you always stay original and be truthful and find the truth in you where that is, and really it's about what interests you, because if you're interested, you're usually interesting.
Right.
You know, you're not necessarily the most
If you're passionate about telling the story, then it's a passionate story and people are going to listen. Right.
Right. So instead of like, what's a good story? Instead, you know, in classes, we start with little small chunks and work upwards. And people kind of just learn to stand in front of other people and find their voice and not use written material to you. So you're not worried about like that topic sentence.
Yeah.
You know, for something like a YouTube video or a book, that topic sentence matters, because if you don't like the first thing they say, you're a done.
Yeah.
But in live, anything live, that's never how it is. You've got like a bunch of time initially to like do what you can do a slow open.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's a really effective thing. You've got a lot of time up top to kind of mess around because people can't walk out very easily.
Right. Exactly.
And people remember things retroactively. So if you're interesting at the end, then they'll remember you haven't been interested at the beginning.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So is there a... When you were first talking, it sounded like when you do these classes that you teach a set format for telling stories, but now it sounds like there are different ways that you can sculpt a story.
Yeah. Well, we teach that there are certain things you want to do. In a level one, in level two classes, we'll do you can do profiles of other people, things like that. But in level one class, in storytelling, we really want to focus on getting you holding your point of view and keeping it and not apologizing for it. Mm-hmm. Just keeping that point of view of what you felt, what you saw, what happened to you in your own experience, and never stepping out of that. So that's true of all stories, and we kind of like really ruthlessly work that and work on taking that stuff. You know, a lot of people who tell stories are smart people, and smart people often fail to tell you how they feel about what's happening to them. You know, they think that that's not interesting, but it is. That's the only interesting thing.
Totally. Yeah.
It's not the only interesting thing.
Well, and then the other thing that smart people often do is they think that this sort of theoretical framework will help the story work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really the opposite. It's like you can get away with that theoretical framework if you pay into the bank of the rest of the story. You have some playroom in a story, and it's your story, so you... You know, if you want to tell the story to say that you hate cars, you could do that. But you've got to do everything else even better to get away with that. You know, and if that's true of anything, whether it's your religious affiliation or whether it's science, you know, whether it's stuff, unless the people actually agree with you ahead of time, it's hard to cross that barrier when you stand up and say, this is how life is. But if you instead say, this is how I am, people will listen to anything. You can go... you know, you can go anywhere and just stand up and say initially, I don't know, you know, go, what's the most hostile thing I can imagine?
Well, okay, so you go to this hostile place.
And, you know, I can go into some, you know, arch conservative place and I say, I'm one of those liberal people that you hate. And then you can say anything. After that, you can say anything. It's like that sort of Charlie Pride rule, you know, the country singer. He would go into these redneck bars.
Yeah.
And he would sort of say, a lot of people wonder why I'm singing this kind of song when I look like this. Because I like it. And then you start singing, and people are like, that's fine, because he, you know, did that thing of took away, just said, this is me doing this. You don't have to agree with some universal thing just to accept this experience.
Yeah. 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 All right, we're going to pay a bill, or maybe half a bill. I don't know. Are we paying a whole bill, or are we paying multiple bills?
Oh, I think it's just half a bill.
Okay, it's half a bill. We're going to pay half a bill. We'll be right back with Joel Jones. All right, we are back 16 minutes past the hour here on Homegrown on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And we are talking with Joel Jones from the Big Blue Door about telling true stories.
So my question is, may I?
Yes.
Like I have only one.
This is my last question you ever get.
Clinton has 7 billion questions.
Yeah. Can you imagine if somebody came up to you and said, by the way, this is the last question you'll ever be able
you
to answer.
You can ever ask?
Ever be able to ask.
Oh,
after this,
my God.
You die. Choose well.
Ah.
There's a short story right there.
There's a story.
A play.
The longest question I could think of. No. So what do you think compels people to be telling truth? I mean, what's the appeal? Okay, I'm going to make it this difficult. What's the appeal to listen to people telling true stories? And what's the appeal of telling true stories? Because it's interesting. I go to selfies and I play off of something that you just said before, which is you were talking about, well, it's a world full of strangers. And there's so much backlash against selfies. By the way, and believe it or not, you would think, being the cranky curmudgeon that I am, that I would be one of those people going, oh, all these people taking selfies. I love the selfie phenomenon because I
really,
yeah, uh-huh. I really enjoy, seeing the pictures that people take of themselves. I really enjoy self-portraiture, and I think that selfies are...
Then maybe you should engage in it.
No, not necessarily. I enjoy the people making
pictures. I'm just saying.
Of themselves. So, and I wonder, yeah. and I think of that. I wonder if that type of selfie is also a type of self-storytelling.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think what makes a good selfie is that enthusiasm of the person having the picture taken. But, you know, when you come across someone who maybe takes too many pictures.
Yeah.
So the two things, the people around us are incredibly fascinating. That's one of the things you learn, is that everyone is more interesting than Hollywood movies. Everyone. Now, that may not have been in the case before, I don't know. But people have incredibly interesting lives, and so it's really interesting to take the class and just listen to other people's stories. And also to realize that you're interesting, that you have all these stories. And, you know, a lot of times you think you have one big one, you know, but really you have an incredible, you could tell a story of anything if you're really enthusiastic about that and learning what's interesting to you. Now, it's important that people learn how to do it with some skill, mm-hmm. because, and that's maybe a problem with, you know, contemporary art, is to mistake self-expression for lack, you know, that you
yes.
don't have to have any skill, but you have to have skills to do this. You know, especially
wait, go back and say that clearer, because that was one of the mistakes of contemporary art, is mistaking self-expression with...
For art itself, but self-expression is, you know, a component of it, but you got to have some skills to actually use the medium that you're going to use. If you want to stand in front of people and tell a story, you have to use time well,
mm-hmm.
and it's really important.
Yeah.
And that means it's important to... And no one does it perfectly, you know, but it's important to, show respect for other people by editing yourself. You know, you have to edit. You have to cut back to the core of what your story is. And that's a learned thing. A lot of
yeah.
people stand up. Right now, most short people don't have any idea how long 6 minutes is. Is that you know, my marriage? Or is that one date? You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right,
and,
right.
And it's finding that out, that it's the process of actually sharing back and forth and really starting to see yourself. Because
mm-hmm.
human beings think in narrative. You know, you think that way.
Do you ever get people pushing back at you when you try to teach that and say, you know, if... The more constructed and structured this is, the less it feels authentic
or real
and revelatory.
Yeah, I mean, mostly because any kind of class, it tends to self-select people who are interested in that approach, or at least willing to listen to it, be in a class.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, you know, we'd get people who mostly what they thought is that you had to have a point. That the story had to have a point to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And people teach a lesson or something like that. And it's hard to get across how untrue that is. And how,
Jerry Seinfeld says, no.
he did an entire TV show about it for how long?
Yeah, that you can't really, that if you're teaching a lesson in your story, that almost certainly, one of the elements of a good storytelling is perspective. That means you have to step outside, you'd be far enough away from the material that you don't need anything from people when you're telling it.
Right.
Now that's can be hard because there's some things that happened horrible that you can immediately tell a story about. Other things
yeah.
that aren't even that bad, maybe that's so hard for some reason to get that perspective. You just can't get it. It's hard to know when that comes. Now, in a class, we work that out because we can say, you know, that's a great story, but it's not ready yet. You know, you're not
mm-hmm.
able to over there. But when you tell a story, if you tell the most beautiful story in the world in front of people, what can they say? I liked your story.
Right.
You know, and if it's a terrible story, we'll just say, good job. You know, there's nothing else people can really. It's
like, right.
You have to
right.
learn in art that you're not going to get this. They don't lift you up and carry off the stage and and then you have to do it again the next day. If you know, you're anything, you have to, you have to really teach people not to build toward that huge event. And instead, as a regular part of life. This isn't therapy, and this isn't, I mean, therapy, storytelling is part of therapy, but storytelling is also just part of being a healthy human. We believe it's part of a healthy society is people share stories about themselves, and that's how else do people get information about how the world really works, as opposed to, you know, some, you know, whatever comes from the media or whatever, which have their own agenda, which is a different one.
So the class is six sessions. And so if somebody wants to sign up, how do they do that?
They go to bigbluedoor.org and .org, and they can sign up online. I think you can find it at the website there, and that's the top story. You know, we have little postings, and you can sign up there. They also it's right now listed 175, but I think when I get home from this show, I'm going to drop it to 165. For the dozens of listeners out there.
Hey.
And the first four sessions there's not much written homework. It's just like telling stories in class, and we're going to work it out. And then you will pick and do finally, once you've developed your kind of style as a storyteller, then we'll ask you to do a written draft. And that's really an interesting thing for the first time, because people are like
wow, wait a minute, so I haven't different. Written anything down. Wait, what?
And then you do a written draft and bring it in. And then we work with a microphone. We use memorization techniques, Memory Palace, these kind of ways of memorizing material, listening. We talk about privacy. We talk about how you deal with, you know.
So that when they deliver these stories, they're delivering them from memory.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We never let people stand on stage with the paper, you know.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that, because then you're reading. You know, you're looking at this. Now, you could do it here. You know, I've got a table in front of me. I can read. But, you know, you don't want people's eyes cutting down. You want to keep on them, on the audience. Right. And it's also, you know, teaching people to learn stuff by heart is part of the fun of it. And learning how to organize and learning to get lost on stage and not know where they are and just be able to recover and tell the story. You know, it's your life.
Yeah. Well, we know all about getting lost on stage.
We've spent lives getting lost
on stage.
That's part of, I think that's the summary of my whole acting philosophy. So you say that this is a movement. Where did you first encounter true storytelling?
I'd heard of, you know, seen stuff like Spalding Gray or whatever, but
Spalding.
No, he does a different thing. You know,
I'm sorry, just a moment for Spalding Gray.
Right. But I don't know much about it. Only a little bit. You remember Sabi Durkee? You remember her from?
Yeah.
She used to talk about Spalding. That's all I ever heard of Spalding Gray from her. And then I was in New York, and they had this this thing. You know, this moth. The moth is and other storytelling shows. And I took a class with a woman, Margot Lightman, and she later on, she's now in Hollywood, and she wrote a book about storytelling later. So she's a well-known person, and she writes for movies. She was a stand-up comic before. And so I took that, and Jen took a class with a person named Adam Wade, who also is a storyteller in the moth scene. But we had a group up there called Campfire Stories, a monthly show that we did, a bunch of us.
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, sure. And so we did, and there are a lot of them in town, Story Collider, and you know, I don't know what they are now. I've been down here 6 years, but there used to be a whole, you know, five or six shows that ran all the time.
Mm-hmm. Again, but with a huge soul-sucking, soul-crushing, anonymous, hideous Babylonian farcical hellscape that is New York City.
Wow.
Doesn't it make sense that that there would be an appeal to actually being able to connect to people and hear their stories? Do you think there's as much of an appeal here in a small town where we can actually know each other and deal with each other as human beings?
Our story shows have done, I mean, our classes have done well. I mean, I definitely think that kind of almost especially in Charlottesville, because you can follow it up. I mean, in New York, there's so many like stand-up comics and people like that who can, they do storytelling and they're good at it, but there's also a little bit like they know how to make it.
Yeah.
So they're always, you know, are playing up the most vulnerable, you know, like
right.
People tell these stories like, you know, my sisters took my aunt farm, and I believe you, but not completely, you know.
Right.
I think it's especially true here, especially because, you know, we can't really do stand-up comedy here very well, because, you know, something like that where there's a tangent, but like to do stand-up comedy well, you need to do the same material over and over again until you get
right.
at it, right?
Right.
But if you do the same storytelling at an open mic in Charleston, people are going to stop coming to the open mic.
Right.
So where is the other place for you to practice the material?
Right.
So something like storytelling is really amazing because it actually can fill that. You know, you can get in front of people on stage and tell something. And there's, you know, people, there's a market for memoirs and people
yeah.
can read it. And, yeah. And people here are very interesting. You know, it's surprising how, especially, you know, you think of it kind of a different way. I've lived here I've been here for 40 years. So, you know, you think of it in so many different ways through the years. But these days, it seems kind of like, you know, a little yuppie, little, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of pop. Mm-hmm. And people are so much more interesting than that when you put people in class of different backgrounds and hear mm-hmm. their stories. I mean, my goodness, we just did one this summer and we just did one earlier in the fall. And the stories people told of just, you know, the stuff the human beings endure and get through and overcome is incredible. And just the fun, the humor of people, you know, stories as little light as like, you know, mom and dad trying to deal with the tooth fairy on one night when everything goes wrong.
Oh, yes.
But then other people telling stories about, like, you know, abusive marriages and trying to get out of them, trying to escape. And how do you do that? And, you know, people dealing with, you know, stuff like just meeting the father-in-law and getting drunk, you know, and other people telling stories about, you know, violence. And, you know, so there's a huge, and everyone has, you know, such a gamut of experiences that it's interesting to find how, as people find their way through
yeah.
their own lives, you know, people realize people realize how interesting they are, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, I took it, you know, we do theater, all of us, right?
Yeah.
And,
right.
You ever notice like that plays or something kind of that, you know, that sort of group of like, five people, whatever, stuck somewhere, and then we find the dirty truths under it all.
Right.
And it's
right.
never that convincing. I mean, but it's engaging, you know, it always works, you know, it's like, oh, but did they really bury a baby in the backyard?
Right.
You know,
like,
and you know, the most extreme example is August Osage County, which is incredibly right. well constructed, but like every, I mean, there's incest, there's like every insane thing that they could possibly throw into
yes.
it.
Yes.
And then there's a point which, for me, I was like, okay, if this is where we're going, then all we can do to create interest on stage is by just coming up with crazy revelations that aren't really that plausible, given the characters that they are.
Mm.
Instead, why not just see what people are really like?
Yeah.
And true with their politics, too. What are people really like? You know, so with our improv and with, you know, trying to break things down and try to start again with just a sense of what do people do? What do they think? What do they feel? And I don't really know. You know, I know, you know, myself, but of course, I'm, you know, both simultaneously far more messed up than anyone else, and also far better than anyone else. I don't know how that happened. It's a miracle. But I can't believe all those people are like that. I wish I was like them. You know.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to get in that in between room and start finding out what people are like. And yeah, it's cool. It's always a privilege for me to teach. You know.
Yeah.
But so.
So Joel, thank you so much for coming on the show. Give us the who, what, when, and where.
Oh, yeah. So there's a improv. I mean, not improv. I've done improv. I already started. You missed it. Sorry. I started last week, and yeah, it filled up, so you didn't get in. We have Country Stories starts this coming Sunday, which is November 4th, and it's an afternoon on Sunday, so you can find out about it at bigbluedoor.org, and I am the teacher, Joel Jones. I'd be privileged to
all right, at McGuffey?
McGuffey Arts Center, Studio 20.
Awesome.
There we go.
Thank you so much, Joel.
Joel Jones.
Thanks a lot,
always
y'all.
A pleasure, man. Oh, my goodness. This is a long list of stuff.
Well, then let's get to it.
Okay. It's your last chance. Your very, very last chance to see Arthur Miller's The Crucible at Four County Players in the Cellar. Currently running November 11th through November 11th. Edward Albee's A Delicate Balance at Live Arts. Through November 26th, the American Shakespeare Center's summer and fall season featuring Much Ado About Nothing, Love's Labor's Lost, Henry VI Part 3 by Shakespeare, and the modern musical Peter and the Starcatcher, all at the Blackfriars Playhouse in Stanton. Through January 16th, the Kluge Roo Aboriginal Art Collection presents an off-site exhibition, Defending the Ocean, 21 works by contemporary indigenous artists celebrating the central importance of the ocean to human life. Oh my goodness. Through November Okay, so November 2nd, UVA MFA Reading Series continues with Anna Tomlinson and Olivia Haberman at New Dominion Bookshop. November 2nd, former guest Shannon Harrigan leads the Charlottesville Raider House seminar, The Making of a Debut Memoir, a conversation about lessons learned and tricks of the trade. Sorry, I just had to do that voice. November 4th, the 12th annual Best of Both Worlds Dance and Step competition at the Paramount Theater. Oh, and By the way, a former guest of ours is playing at this.
What?
Vibe Riot is playing at the step competition at Fairmount. Yes, Jay sent me a thing last night. He's like, I'm playing. Can you come? I'm like, I have a show. Okay. November 4th, former guest Amanda Corman leads the Charlottesville Writer House Seminar, Writing Love, a seminar for prose writers who are looking to make vivid the feelings. Oh, really? Really? You did this? I'm not reading that, Clinton. November 5th and 6th, auditions for the musical review, A View from Some Broads at Four County Players. They're looking to cast 7 to 9 women of a certain age who can sing. Well, all right. Check the Facebook page for details. And for your musical options this week.
Bum-ba-da-bum-ba-da-bum. For the musical options this week, currently running till November 3rd, Victory Hall Opera presents Rameau's Sympathy at The Haven. I think we talked about that earlier in the show. Also today, Duo Bohème at Brasserie Saison at noon. Jim Wave at Adventure Farm and Vineyards at noon. The Oliveras Trio at Albemarle Ciderworks at 2:30. Aaron Lunsford at Glasshouse Winery at 3:30 on October 31st. I believe people know that as Halloween. Travis Elliott at Fellini's.
Travis!
Catch members of Blenders, Adar, Tequila Mockingbird, and the Day of the in the Day of the Dead All Stars playing Grateful Dead with a funky twist at the Ante Room on November 3rd. Billy and the Backbeats at Glasshouse Winery, Bob Bonetta, and then Chickenhead Blues Band at Fellini's. Also on the November 3rd, Songwriters in the Round at the Front Porch Roots Music School, featuring, get this, oh my gosh, Lauren Hoffman, Ben Arthur, and Matt Carrary.
Holy crap, all the stuff
saying.
I want to go to.
Oh, and because I'm old and I've been here forever, I love the fact that I get to say this.
Okay.
November 3rd, Baba Seth. And then Smooth Talk Birthday Bash featuring Denzi from Da Block and DJW at the Ante Room. On November 4th, Western African Drum Circle, drums provided and led by Witten at Emancipation Park. Also, the University of Virginia New Music Ensemble presents A Night of New Music at the Bridge Progressive Arts Institute. Also on the 4th, singers who love early music are invited to gather at The Haven to sing selections from the Oxford Book of Tudor Anthems.
Excuse me?
The Oxford Book of Tudor Anthems. Early music at The Haven.
Okay.
LG and Friends at the Whiskey Jar, Lord Nelson at the Batesville Market, John Dearth, and then Sammy Horn at Fellini's. Every Friday, it's the West African Drum Circle at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Every Monday, the Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Every Monday also, it's Seafoot, the Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music, the weekly open jam at Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Where else? On Tuesdays, it's the traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Also, the Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Sales at the Bebedero.
Salsa.
On the Wednesday, it's the Open Mic Night at Pro Reynada Farm Brewery. The Open Mic Night at Holly's Deli and Pub, hosted by Josh Mayo. Jazz Collective Number 9 at Fellini's Number 9. Bachata Fusion at the Anteroom, presented by the Charlottesville Salsa Club. DJ and Friends at the Bebedero. And the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's Thursday. Lua at the Bebedero.
And Thursday, John Dearth
with the John Dearth Quintet at Miller's.
Woo! That's a lot of stuff.
I'm Ethan Murphy.
And I'm Susan.
Dang it.
And we're from Slade Nash. And you're listening to
Homegrown
on 94.7.
35 minutes past the hour, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art. Stay tuned after the show for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Sean the Mon McCord. His guest is going to be Jody Kilbasa, the director of the Virginia Film Festival, along with his programmer, Wesley Harris. They're going to be talking about, surprise, surprise, the Virginia Film Festival, which is coming up.
It is.
But before we get filmy.
Yes. Let's get funny.
Oh, nice one. I didn't know where I was going to go with that.
See, I saved
and you.
You
just, I put it up, and then you just put
and
it
I
in.
And I just slam dunked it right in there for you. You're welcome, by the way. Chris Allen, what's up, man?
Oh, yeah, let's cleanse the palate after we talked about improv, folks. Let's talk about real comedy, stand-up comedy.
Ouch. Ouch.
I'm kidding.
Joel isn't here to defend himself. That's not
even
okay,
if he
man.
Was,
see, Chris, that's your go-to. You just pick a fight.
You've been here before.
I've noticed
I have to. That's what I do.
I'm kidding.
Uh-huh. Improv is great. Improv is... It's fantastic.
That doesn't sound sincere. Chris.
Yeah, no. I don't know how convincing that was.
It didn't sound sincere at all.
It's great. If you like, you know, improv, that's fine. It's just fine.
So what you're saying is it's not your cup
of tea. I'm kidding. No. I love improv. I'm totally kidding. Okay. There's this rift between stand-ups and improv, and I feel like I need. It's like the East Coast, West Coast rap beef of the 90s. I have to keep it going. You know what I mean?
Okay. So, it's your job. It's a moral imperative for you.
Yes, I have to.
All right.
There's nothing wrong with improv at all. I love improv. So please go check out Joel Jones.
Joel Jones.
Go check him out. Joel Jones.
You don't even know.
Yes, I do. Like, Joel Jones.
You're like Donald Trump looking at the name.
Did you see him with the kids?
No.
You didn't see that clip with him with the kids that came into the
They let kids
office?
Near him?
Yeah.
Thank you.
What?
I'm just saying.
Go ahead. What did he do?
Well, he had a bunch of kids in the Oval Office. They were all dressed up in Halloween costumes. And he's like, oh, how does the press treat you? None of you kids are overweight. You don't have weight problems. That's great. And I'm like, what kind of guy does this with?
Oh, my God.
He didn't even say, hey, you look cute. You know, who are you? What are you doing? It was just like asking him questions about the media.
Well, you know, I think that's a blessing in disguise because, you know, I mean, this is a guy who hits on his own daughter, at least talks about how cute his own daughter is.
Yeah,
you
and
don't
how
want
he'd love
Donald
to have
Trump
sex with her if he were
telling little kids how cute
father.
They are.
That's just a little creepy.
That's what
a
are you?
That's
are
a
you?
Bit much.
Are you a sexy witch? You look gorgeous.
You look great.
If you weren't 8, yeah. I'd
yeah.
do you.
Call me in 12 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a progressive station, but Winston actually had a question about the progressiveness of the station.
Well, let's introduce your buddy that you brought with you.
All right, here we go.
Two stand-ups in the house, Chris Allen and Hey! Winston Hodges.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you, Winston?
Doing good.
Welcome to the show.
It's good to be here. Good to be doing radio. Nice. I'm excited, even though they had this anymore. It's really cool. It's really cool. I don't know.
You know what?
It's good. I like...
You know what? We are the longest live show that this station has.
Oh, that's awesome.
We have done more live shows on this station than anybody else.
That's impressive.
Yes, it is.
I love a little...
Just for a number of
special, damn it.
Yes, yeah. No, that's great. I'm having a blast.
Radio, yet another antiquated entertainment information form that is yet to die.
I know, it's out there. I was out there like in the waiting room. You had some highlights magazines and some newspapers. It was nice. Felt good, really tied the room together. Really.
Did you chill with Boys Life? I was reading Boys Life. It's all fun and games until you open
right
up the Boys Life.
Right next to the door that had the Bill Cosby album on it for some reason.
Yes.
Nothing like Bill Cosby's watchful eye to remind you you're at the progressive radio station.
But did you sit on the couch that traps people?
Oh, yeah, it's super comfortable.
Right?
Yeah.
Hard to get up.
Almost dozed right off.
I know. Yeah, that couch eats anyone that sits in it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's a super comfy couch.
Yeah.
So, Comedy at the Anteroom, tell us about that.
We got this show Chris and I run. It's called Host Battle. And it's not like a normal comedy show because we invite comics to come out and do material they have either never done before or they're working out and just trying to get that material straight. And while they're on stage talking, Chris and I have wireless microphones and it becomes a super interactive show where it's usually just us telling them how great their jokes are. That's usually what it's but just a lot of positive feedback.
Yeah, with everything I know about Chris, that's exactly what that's going to be.
It's just a lot of fun. You get to watch. I think the cool part about the show is it kind of captures how stand-up comics actually talk to each other off stage.
Okay.
So you're getting to basically watch us have a live writing session. because we're all good friends, so we're all making fun of each other, making fun of each other's jokes. It turns into, like, there's roasting involved, and the audience gets involved. We'll do crowd work with them. It's a super interactive and
fun
show.
Wow. Well, all right.
So have you guys seen the movie The Big Sick?
I have not. Have you seen it, Chris?
I haven't seen it yet.
You haven't seen it yet? Because it's a romantic comedy, but it's a romantic comedy based on, very much based on, the real life relationship between
Kumail.
Kumail, who's a stand-up comic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And his wife. And so and part of the movie, and the woman who becomes his wife. So part of the movie is looking at his life and looking backstage at him being a stand-up comic in New York and his friends who are trying to be up-and-coming stand-up comics in New York. And I'm thinking of that. And there was another movie that he was in recently.
The improv one? It's like...
The improv one. Yeah. So I'm wondering if we're getting to some place now where we're trying... Where we're taking a step forward in stand up. I mean, stand up is so familiar now in the culture. Are we getting to a place where we're being taken behind the scenes more? Where that's more of an interest, sort of a meta dealing with stand up.
I definitely think with that, and also just honestly with like every comics podcast, you're just listening to them talk about stuff that happens. And I know I've always grown up not just like comics, but like actors and everything. I just wanted to know like the stuff they didn't tell you, because you know, right. Like, oh yeah, what? Because it's a comic. Well, what they talk about on stage, when it's edgy, you're like, ah, what are you saying behind closed doors? If this is what you're comfortable saying in front of a group of strangers, and I don't know, I think people are just enamored with like the mystery of like the type of things we actually talk about off stage, because we're not easily offended people, and most of the stuff we do is like out of irony. It's a lot of fun. Chris and I got a pretty good.
Oh, yeah, good rapport.
Yeah, good rapport, back and forth. It's fun. I definitely recommend coming out. I think the next one is November 2nd at the Ante Room. So come check that one out. It'll be fun.
Very cool. Yeah. So how did you guys get this at the Ante Room?
Well, we were doing a regular mic there, and there was a show. We really didn't have much of a crowd, and Winston was like, hey, maybe we should do this thing where we kind of... interact with the comic while they're on stage, and we can kind of critique their joke while they're on stage. And I was like, I don't know if they want to do that. And then he ran it by all the comics on the show. They were like, yeah, let's do it. Because the Ante Room was a big room.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes just kind of hard just to do stand-up there when there's not a lot of people. Because it's just
right.
Because
it's huge, yeah.
Yeah, it's so we did that, and people freaking loved it. They loved it because we kind of wander around the venue while we're doing our riffing, and it kind of brings everybody into the show. So instead of one person talking at nine people, it's just now you have this group of, you know, nine people kind of interacting with each other and laughing. And typically on shows you don't really heckle out, but at this show it's really just an interactive writing show.
Okay.
And it's a lot of fun. And
yeah, I was thinking, does the audience does the audience start getting into it? Do they start?
Do they get to heckle?
When we set it up right, because Winston and I will go up and do maybe 10 minutes up front, and we'll do crowd work with people, find out what kind of jobs they do, where they go to school, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, like if someone says something in their joke and go, oh, this guy's a doctor, why don't you go see him? So that way we can kind of incorporate our crowd work into the with the audience and into the show. So it's a lot of fun, especially where like you got this guy who's like one show we had a dude who was afraid of, he had a ghost in his house or something.
Yeah.
He had a ghost in his house. This other person was they were the manager at Jimmy John's. So depending on what's going on at the show, you can incorporate that Jimmy John's manager into the joke, or somebody will say something later about being afraid of dogs, and then like, well, this guy's afraid of ghosts, and you can kind of just make this one huge story. And I think that's when it's really, really fun, is when the audience gets involved as well.
So basically, you're doing improv.
Oh, no.
No!
Bleep!
She finds the soft center.
Gotcha.
She aims. She pierces.
I don't dislike improv at all, because I love doing crowd work. It's all improvisation. I love improv. Don't get me wrong. I don't dislike improv.
Winston, save him. Save him.
Well, the difference between the crowd work and improv is like improv doesn't have to be funny. And the crowd work does. You can't bomb. Isn't that what Joel just said, though? This is about the storytelling, and it didn't have to be funny. I was listening to the first part.
Okay.
Yeah, attention to the show.
He actually made a distinction between storytelling and improv.
Two different things. Yeah.
But, like, yeah, the whole
thing. But something that Joel did say, which I want to bring back to you guys, is he was talking about how difficult it is to be good at stand up in a town like this, because to be good at stand up you've got to do your material over and over
and
over again.
Yeah, you got to get up a lot, and it's tough.
And here,
yeah,
like in a small town, like
yeah, where do you do that?
Yeah, because it's like somebody.
We do the shows here, and then I just but we just drive all over for shows. Like, I go all over Virginia pretty much. Chris has he hits way farther than that. He'll go to D.C. and get out of the state and stuff, and just like I've done like open mic at like karaoke. I've done open mic comedy at like a music open mic, and like I did it once at Holly's, and I just asked the dude was like, hey. You guys can play music behind me. I just really want to say these jokes into a microphone. So this dude was laying like a sick funk beat behind me for like 10 minutes while I was just like doing my jokes and stuff. But yeah, you're right. It's super duper tough. And that is the one thing that I definitely think. And I couldn't do improv because I being in a group with a like having to trust other people to make the scene good is the part that I can't do. So improv terrifies me to try for that reason. But that is the one good thing about improv in like a smaller area, is because it is 100% improvised. You do the scene, you have that intimate night with the crowd, and after that, that scene's gone. Like, that's just a moment you have with them. It's gone forever. Mine's I still got to go tell my same stupid fart joke tomorrow. Like, I got to get this tight five on farts down. Because if not, I'm not going to get on Jimmy Fallon. Like, I got to get this 5 minutes. That's what I got to do.
Really? I tell you something that struck me that I've never forgotten is back when Comedy Central first came out, I think it was in the 90s, maybe late 80s in the 90s, and they actually had stand-up comedy shows on Comedy Central, and so the nation is tuning in to see all of these new stand-up comics doing, and some of them were like, I mean, you hear a lot of people talking about, well, dogs are like this, and cats are like this, and but you did hear some really wonderful, brilliant things, and there are a lot of people who got in the spotlight, but what I learned afterwards was that shows like that, like Short Attention Span Theater, or the other comic shows that they had, really hurt, if not ruined, a bunch of careers, because there were a lot of up-and-coming comics who went on those shows, did their material, and suddenly the nation saw their material
and never wanted to see them again.
Well, no, it's not that they never wanted to see them again. It's just like then that was their act.
Yeah, and they're so young,
when they went out touring, it's just like everyone had heard their material already. They had to, jump back and suddenly develop new material, which takes a while.
It takes time,
right? Doesn't it?
It takes time. I mean, I hear guys talk about the comedy boom. You guys familiar with Dion Cole? He's on Blackish. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When Def Comedy Jam happened, when the whole urban boom happened, he was on tour, but he was such a young comic, he didn't even have the 15 minutes to do the spot that he was supposed to do.
Right.
He eventually got kicked off the tour, and he had to go back to Chicago and work on his act. But he said that was the best thing that happened to him. But the thing is, it's like that show was so popular. People liked him so much they wanted to see him. And But you see it now with a lot of these Instagram comics too. Like, some of these people, they'll have like 2-3 million followers on Instagram,
right?
And then they get booked at these comedy clubs, and
they have three jokes,
and they get up there and they'd ramble for an hour,
right?
And people are like, "Why did I just pay $40 to see this?"
Right?
But people see that popularity online. A lot of these talent agencies and stuff, the industry, they see a built-in fan base, and they go, "We got to get this person booked at the Funny Bone, the Improv."
Right, right.
And they're not great. Some of them, it takes time. It takes a couple of years to finally build a solid hour. And luckily, when these folks have this following, they have access to like more successful comics in L.A. and New York, and they go, "Hey, this is the stuff you need to be doing. This is what you need to work on." So they get to meet those comics, and they give them that advice to help them build their acts. So, yeah, it still happens now. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to pay half a bill again. So by the end of the show, we'll, a bill and a half, maybe?
A bill and a Ted?
going on an adventure. Anyway. All right, 52 minutes past the hour. You are listening to Homegrown, the only show about local art here.
Dedicated
on
to local art. I think there is actually another show in town that sprinkles local art in with other things.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I think so.
No.
But we are dedicated.
Don't help him out.
Right?
I'm out of business.
Thank you. Thank you. He's like ruining our niche here.
Stand-up comedians, you guys are cutthroat.
Got you.
You have to be.
You
got to
run them out of business. They didn't ask me to be on this show.
So. Right? That's right.
I'll have a different tune next week when I'm on there.
Why would you advertise that? Why would you? That's like going on a date and telling a woman, like, hey, I know a guy that looks way better than me and makes more money.
That's...
Don't.
Does that not work?
That's what Clinton's been doing for the past 12 years.
I thought full disclosure would be sexy.
No, baby. You know? No, just, lie.
It depends.
Lie on the first date.
You don't want to outsource your...
I try to start all my dates like, let me just, at the top, let me talk about my issues with my mother.
Oh!
But you know, that's not a bad idea, because if she's in, she's in, and she's out, she's out. There you go. Yeah, just
there you go.
I don't want a first date to be a therapy session. What
the
hell?
In comedy, sometimes I will just bury myself right off the bat. I mean, talk about the worst thing ever, and it's
really.
Yeah, I don't know why I do it.
Just because?
Just because, yeah.
Like, you know you're doing it?
Yeah.
And you do it anyway?
I do it. He's seen it several times.
Because you're the sandpaper of the world, Chris.
I am. I got a lot of issues going on. I'm kind of depressed right
do
now.
You?
Yes, I do.
Oh, you're depressed right now?
I am.
Why are you depressed?
Because he's living in the new fascist America. That's why he's depressed.
I got a lot of stuff going
That's
on.
Normal.
I'm ready to move on with certain aspects of my life, and it's just... It's torture. I'm just, I've been seeing the therapist. That helps. Everybody should see a therapist. It's fun.
Really?
Yeah.
It's fun?
It's fun.
It's fun.
Yes, for me, it is fun to learn, like, oh, this is why I do these certain things.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's fun for me. Yeah. It's probably not the right word, but it is fun for me. I enjoy it. There's times where I leave, I'm like, that was great. That was fun to discover. I don't know.
All right.
Yeah. I thought you were ranting.
So, I am going to rant. Later.
You have a great voice, by the way.
Do you want me to rant about you?
You can.
Because, you know.
What did I do now?
I could definitely do that.
What did I do?
I don't know. You're kind of annoying, Chris. I just, you know.
That's very true.
Yeah.
I hate myself, too. So, that's what
So, Winston, how long have you been doing improv? How long have you been doing stand-up?
Yeah, so, good transition there. We call that a segue in the business. Pretty good. Oh, goodness. I've been almost 3 years. It'll be 3 years in April, so...
Mm. What are you doing?
Improving.
That is not messing with his face.
Just
is not
to stick
improv.
His finger in my mouth.
I know.
A good joke. The people out there really liked hearing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing works better on radio than visual comedy.
Yeah, exactly. Just a good thing
hell?
We don't have props. Just like from a whole trunk.
The radio prop.
Company. Yeah, exactly.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so I have a. A very obnoxious friend of mine who, whenever he meets a comic in real life, the first thing he
says...
Tell
me a joke.
Yeah, yeah. So say something funny. Like, what do you guys do with that? Like,
I send him a link to one of my sets online. Yeah. Like, here you go. Watch it. If you're going to do it, like me on Instagram. Then you get to hear a joke.
But you know, it's that's such an interesting... moment, because you get that so consistently,
mm-hmm.
and there's an aggressiveness, but there's also a sort of bitter hostility to it. And I wonder if it's people, and I wonder if you guys get this. I wonder if it's people kind of resenting comics and resenting stand-ups, because it looks like it should be so easy,
yeah.
right? It looks like it should be, you just stand up and be funny. I can be funny, but it's not easy.
Yeah, but also comics were the only, like artists, I do air quotes with that have, like, the thing where we get asked to do it and we don't want to do it. Like, every person I know with a guitar, it's like, hey, you play a song? Oh, I've been waiting to play Hey There, Delilah all day. I'm glad... I've been hanging out in this quad, and I've just been waiting for you to come by. And I've never seen a magician not do a trick in my life. I've never seen a magician be like, no, you got to check out my website. It's like, oh, I've got cards on me.
It requires a certain setting, because when I first started doing comedy, people would do the same thing, tell me a joke, and I would, and it wouldn't go well.
Oh,
right.
No.
That's not funny, and I learned very quickly, like, to never do that. But a lot of comics will tell you, like, to learn some stock jokes. you know, just regular knock-knock jokes or just, you know, two guys walk into a bar.
Yeah.
Learn those type of jokes. That way when people ask you, they
can... That's what you tell them?
You can tell them a knock-knock. I typically just say no. I'm not going to do that. It's bad. It's embarrassing. The thing with comedy is you have to go full bore. You can't go in. Can I say half-ass?
Yeah, you can say half-ass.
You can't go in half-ass with comedy. You gotta. I mean, if I'm gonna do a joke, I need the lights down. I need people to have a couple of drinks. And I'll tell you one joke, but you need to have a setting for it. But I can be funny in the moment. But yeah, to try to tell you one of my jokes out of context, it does not go well, and it's very embarrassing.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
Do you really hate me or
no?
I think she does. All right.
I don't really hate you.
See this? Now I'm worried.
No, of course not. Why would I hate you,
If you
Chris?
Hate Chris Allen, come out to the Ante Room November 2nd
and
hear a host battle and yell at him a lot.
Now that's a segue.
There we go. I like him.
Well, thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
and now let's
awesome.
Hit Leslie's weekly rant.
All right. So I took my hair out. Normally that's not a huge thing, but as the day approached where I knew it had to come out, I got increasingly nervous about it. Now, it's not that I dislike my natural hair. It's that, you know, hair is supposed to look a certain way for a black girl, right? There's always been a push and pull when it comes to my hair. And when I was little, I sat on the floor between my mother's knees as she painstakingly and lovingly parted and braided my hair. And at some point, that became childish. That bonding between my mother and I became something I outgrew. And of course, the only choice after braiding was a relaxer. And I did that for years. Hair is a big deal in the black community. It's a status symbol. It has become a way that black people identify, signify, and place each other in social hierarchy. So being a black girl that couldn't have what was considered black girl hair has always been a point of contention with me. To tell you the truth, long before I had problems with my hair, my blackness was always in question, even inside the black community. I'm a high yellow child, so black people of a darker hue have always questioned how black I really am. It didn't matter that white society looked at me the same way they looked at them. So having black girl hair was yet another way that I could firmly cement myself in the culture that I call my own. I found other ways to signify my blackness. I got cornrows, I got micro braids, I started wearing head wraps. I did everything I knew to do to signify to the outer world that I was black, as if the outer world didn't already look at me and see that. So I have to thank my friend Tiff. When I got this last hairdo, she said to me, "You've always had black girl hair. You're a black girl." So my curly fro may be gone for now. And next week, I'll have another hairdo that I needed to get done for the art I'm about to do. But I will carry that lesson that Tiff shared with me. Because, indeed, I am a black girl.
And that's this week's Homegrown. We'd like to thank our guests, Joel Jones, Chris Allen, and Winston Hodges. Coming up next, Sunday Morning Wake Up Call with your host, Sean McCord. He's going to be talking to Jody Kilbasa, director of the Virginia Film Festival, and his programmer, Wesley Harris. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
Does the way I wear my hair make me a better person? Does the way I wear my hair make me a better friend?
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.